Hi, my name's Kelly. I'm an alcoholic. And I sobered up the day before Thanksgiving, 1982. That's 40 years of sobriety. And I was born June 23rd, 1942. And that makes me 80 years old. When I came through the airlines, you know, I have to go through a special place because I have a pacemaker, you know. And so anyway, I'm going through there, and the guy that's getting me through there, he keeps talking to me and talking to me and talking to me and talking to me. Finally, guy says, "Please, will you let her go get her plane and quit flirting with her?" I says, "I still got it." Yeah, baby. Anyway, I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I was born to, I'm Catholic, 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 okay? I don't know if I mentioned it, but I'm Catholic. Yeah, and anyway, in our family, nobody gets into divorce. In the little village that came from in Pittsburgh, everybody went to the same Catholic church, and they all sang in the same pew, and that's how it was. You know, nobody got a divorce. And my mother and father were childhood sweethearts. But my mother was really gorgeous. She was absolutely gorgeous. And anyway, my dad went off to fight in the war. And while he was over there, my mother used to go to these bars because she liked to sing. They were called piano bars. And some guy got a hold of her and says, "Hey, you know, if you go with me to Vegas, I'm going to make you a movie star." And she believed him. Yeah. And anyway, she divorced my father and dumped me with my grandmother. And whenever my father got back from the war, he went and talked to the priest. And in those days, he was only like, 20 years old. And he had his whole life ahead of his. And the priest told him, "Well, you're going to get an annulment, and you got to pastor size that child," you know. So everybody in the village knew that I did not have a father or mother. And my grandmother raised me, and the aunts would sit around the kitchen table, and they would talk in hushed voices about my mother. And I sat there, and I would sit in the corner, and I just shut down. And I was shut down in school. I didn't have any friends. My mother came back and got me one day, and we moved to California with my stepfather, and I couldn't, nobody could understand a word I said because I spoke Pennsylvania Dutch. And there I was in California, overweight, and I went to school there. And then I graduated from high school, and I got a job, and I went to college. And I was sitting there one day in college, all minding my own business and shut down. And all of a sudden, the most handsome, good-looking boy walks on campus, okay? Now, I have atrial fibrillation, you know. But that day, my heart is beating out of my chest, and I couldn't take my eyes off of him. And he was dressed in a Marine uniform. Now, he dated this girl named Judy, and she was a cheerleader. And so I knew that he'd have nothing to do with me, you know. But I'm just staring at him, and he comes over to me, and he walks over to me, and he says, "Hey, kid, do you like to dance?" And I don't know where it came from. I go, "I'm a dancing fool." So he takes me to a bar, sits me down at the end of the bar, And I look up and I look around at the people and I know they hated me. They kept squinting at me and whispering. I knew they hated me. And the next thing that happened is a chimney of Coca-Cola with a little lime in it. Yeah, you got it. Shows up in front of me, and I was thirsty. I was really thirsty, and I picked up that Coca-Cola, and I chug-a-lugged it, and oh my goodness, it went down my body, and it was like velvet, and it was massaging my organs as it went down. Oh, it was wonderful. And another one appears, and I chug-a-lugged that too, and I kept getting thirstier and thirsty. And I looked up around me, and all of a sudden, everybody's smiling at me. And by the third one, I looked up, and I said, these people love me. And I came up with BFF long before any of you young people did. I got up, and I walked around the bar, and I told everybody, I love you, and we're going to be best friends forever. And that night, I had my first drink. I drank for the first time. I danced. Let me tell you, I did the boogie woogie. And I was so good at it, people actually came up and they were trying to do what I was doing. They wanted to learn from me. So that night, I drank for the first time. I danced for the first time. That night, I had sex for the first time. And that night, I got pregnant. I had arrived. And that Marine, he stepped up to the plate, and we went to Las Vegas, and we got married in the little white chapel. Yeah. And then we went to California, and we went back to California, and we got this little apartment. And when my little Tracy Lynn was born... My God, I held her in my arms, and she was the most beautiful baby girl I've ever seen in my life. And I fell in love with her. I fell in love with her. And I told her, I said, Tracy Lynn, you are going to have the most wonderful life. You're going to have a mommy and daddy that loves you. You are going to have an incredible life. And I meant it. And being Catholic and not knowing how it happens, okay? Next thing I know, I'm pregnant again. How'd that happen? They don't teach you these things in Catholic school, okay? And anyway, I'm about 6.5 months pregnant with my little son, and have my daughter on my, you know how we do, we carry him around on our hip, you know, and I'm in my little apartment, so happy. My life was wonderful. My husband and I were drinking partners together. We drank, fought. We had a normal marriage, I'll tell you. It was wonderful. And all of a sudden, come on the door, and it looked like somebody was hitting with a stick or something. I went to the door, and I opened it up, and there's two very serious-looking LASO, Los Angeles sheriffs, standing at my door. And they says, they saw my condition, you know. They says, can we come in, and will you sit down? Now, I don't know about you, but no cops coming into my house, okay? I says, I don't know what you want, but you know what? You better say it right now. I'm slamming this door shut. They said, well, there was a terrible car accident, and your husband was killed in it. Whoa. And I remember the one sheriff grabbing my daughter, and I fell to the floor, and all of a sudden I felt this spinning. It was a spinning downwards, and I didn't come out of that for 21 and a half years, and during those years, all I wanted to do was drink and die. And anyway, what happened was California took my children away from me. They gave them to a couple that were Pentecostal. They knew I was the devil. They let everybody know that she's the devil. And they took my children. And what I would do is I'd go out and drink, and then I'd get the, man du jour, and say, come on over, I want you to meet my kids. And I'd go over to their house and bang on their door, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, Yeah, yeah. And they had 7 kids of their own, and one of their kids, Dennis, he was a big guy, and he'd always come to the door, I want to see my kids. And then she'd come at the door, Betty would come to the door, I want to see my kids, I'm not leaving until I see my kids. So one night I told this guy, I says, look, I said, whenever we go over there, okay, you grab my daughter and I'll grab my son, and we'll run like heck, and we'll take the kids. He says, okay, that sounds like a good idea. So we did. We went over there, and he grabbed a hold of my daughter, and Dennis was holding my son. So I grabbed for my son, and he wouldn't let him go. And so we were kind of like a tug of war. And all of a sudden, there was this little spark of goodness. You know what I mean? That was still down way deep, deep, deep inside of me. And all of a sudden, I realized that I was in no conditional whatsoever to give those children what they deserved, a good home. And I was in no condition for them. And I knew that this family would take care of them. And I let go of my son, send my daughter back in. I turned back around. They put a thing on me that I couldn't come within 100 feet of anywhere around them. Of course, they moved, and I didn't know where they went. And I'll go to my last drink. My last drink was in Downey, California. Anybody been in Downey, California? Oh, here we go. Well, you know, the cops in Downey do not know how to treat a lady. They picked me up and they took me to jail, and they says, you're a female derelict. And I was. And they says, we're going to send you back down town to 4th and Los Angeles Street. Anybody know where that is? You been there? Oh, baby. Okay. And we're going to let you out. We never want to see you in this city of Downey again. And they put me in the slammer. Now, day before Thanksgiving in 1982, it was freezing cold. If you've ever been in jail about this time, it is freezing in there. I don't know what they do, but it's like they put dry ice or something through there. I mean, it is cold. And they slammed that aluminum door shut. And when they did, I realized that they had mistakenly locked me up with a crazy lady. She had this red face that was bloated, okay? She had this red hair that was all over the place. But she had the craziest eyes of anybody I've ever seen in my... You know what I'm talking about. You do. You know what I'm talking about. I know you do. You've been there, baby. And, yeah, the craziest eyes of anybody I've ever seen. I was scared to death of her, and I started yelling, come and get me, come and get me. You've locked me up with a crazy lady. She's going to hurt me. She's going to hurt me. Come and get me. And he didn't come and get me. They didn't come and get me. And all of a sudden, I had this moment of clarity, and I realized it was me staring at me in that aluminum door. And I couldn't believe what I had become. And you know what I'm talking about, Beth. You've been there. Yeah. I couldn't believe what I had become. And I fell on my knees and I begged God, take me home. I can't make it down here. I can't make it down here, God. Just take me home. And then I started thinking. I said, well, wait a minute, God. I'm only 40 years old. Maybe I'm not ready to die yet, Okay, let's have a deal, Let's talk about a deal here. You know what I'm talking about, Deb. You know, we make a deal. You know, let's make a deal. And I says, if you could show me a way out of here, please, you know. And I don't know what in the world went on, but the shift changed and the sheriff came and he says, come on, you're getting out of here, O.R. I didn't know what O.R. was. And I started to tell him, well, wait a minute. And all of a sudden, something in my head said, shut up. So I shut up. I walked out of there, and the first place I went was to a bar. See, that's where I know to live is in a bar, okay? I know I could sit in a bar stool, and I could feel at home all the rest of my life sitting on that bar stool. That Mahavik bar with mirrors behind it, and I could stare at the one I love the most in love, you know? And as the night would get on, I'd get skinnier, better looking. Oh, baby, and I'd fall in love with myself, you know? Self, 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 me, me, me. And anyway, I went to a bar, and they wouldn't serve me. And so it was the day before Thanksgiving. He says, no, we've got our regulars coming in, and we're making Thanksgiving dinner for them, and we don't want someone like you in here. And then the guy looked at me, and I guess he felt a little bit charitable, and he said, but would you like a bowl of soup before I throw your, you know, out on the street? And I said, oh, I'd love a bowl of soup. Yeah, right. And it was lentil soup. I'll never forget it, with little carrots floating around. And he says, see that phone on the wall back there? I go, yeah. He says, why don't you call somebody and have them come and pick you up? On that day, the day before Thanksgiving, 1982, there was not one human being in this world that Kelly could call and they would accept a call from me. I did not have one friend. My relatives are non-existent. Okay, nothing, nothing, nothing. And I says, well, I'm a con, you know, from the street. So I says, I don't have any money. And he says, oh, here. And he put money on the bar. Now, I have a lot of pride, but I snatched that money up. And in the day, okay, in 1982, you could go to a telephone and call 911 directory assistant, and a live person would answer, okay? So I says, well, I'm going to have a nice conversation with her whenever she, and I'm going to come back. And now, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans, okay? Because my plan was to go back up to the bar and says, okay, my friends are all coming down here, and they said to give me anything I want to drink, and they'll pay for it when they get here. And that was my plan. So I turn around, I go to that bar, you know, I go up to the payphone, right? And right next to the payphone is this neon yellow notice. And it says, if you have a problem with alcohol, or if you think you have a problem with alcohol, call this number. Wow, I'm going to call and report this bar to them. So I picked up the phone and I called that number, and a lady by the name of Helen from the southern area of Los Angeles picked up the phone. Thank God somebody live answered the phone from central office that day, or you'd have a different speaker here today. I can guarantee you that. And she asked me, she says, have you had a drink today? I said, no, that's why I'm calling you. They won't serve me in this bar. She says, well, you just might be able to make it to your first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, what is that? She says, oh, and she says these words. You know how people will say a word and it takes you off in a different trajectory, you know, for life? She said these words to me. She says, and they're going to be so happy to see you. Happy to see me? To see me? And the meeting was only four blocks away. It was on a Wednesday at 7 o'clock. It was a step study, and anyway, I went down there, and it was She says, but you've got to leave there right now. And it was only 3:20 in the afternoon, you know. She was so wise, you know. And I sat there and I waited for you all to show up. And the first time I ever saw you guys, you were the kissinest and hugginest people I had seen in a long time. And right away I started judging you. I said, yeah, I bet you they live in the same apartment building together too. So I went into the meeting. I sat by the back door and I thought, God, if anybody comes near me and finds out how bad I am, bad, I'm going to leave, you know, because if you find out who I am, you won't want me around. So I sat by the back door, and I also watched the president up in front. It was, yeah, by that, in those days, it was a lady, Deb. It was a lady president up in front, yeah. Anyway, at the end of the meeting, she says, then will our newcomer lead us in the Lord's Prayer of her choice? And I turned around to see what one of you newcomers looked like. And you were all staring at me. And this guy grabbed a hold of my hand. His name was Steve Cooper. He says, honey, that is you. I said, how did they know? I said, well, I can't pray. I don't know how to pray. He says, you hold on real tight and say, Our Father, and see what happens. And I remember holding on, and the first time that we ever stood in a circle and said, Our Father, I felt like electricity was going through me. It was so beautiful. And a couple of Thursdays again, I was at district whenever they made the announcement that thing that they were trying to kick out, the Lord's Prayer, failed. Yes, for 80 years we've been saying it. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Yeah, and I'm also, that neon notice, I'm the chairperson for PICPC. In Pinellas County. So I've got those neon yellow notices. I've got 500 of them, and I distributed them to everybody, every meeting, said, put them on, put them everywhere you want them, you know, put them up. And I got them on the back of the buses too in Pinellas County. I got it right on the bus. Oh boy. Anyway, enough about that. Anyway, I do that too. I do things over the top, okay? So I sobered up at a place called the Snake Pit. And then I went downhill from there. And I would go in a meeting, I would just shut down in that meeting, you know, I would just shut down. Let me tell you something, if you're in a meeting, okay, and you shut down and you don't listen to what's being said and you walk out that door, it is the loneliest feeling in the world because you're not connected to anything or anybody. And that's the way I was. It was like a living death. You know, I'd walk out of a meeting and I'd feel like the living death, you know, but there was one guy, there's always got to be that one crusty old timer, right, Deb? His name, yeah, oh gosh. Anyway, he used to talk louder than my head, okay? Yeah. And one day I walked into the, I went into the Snake Pit and he says, Kelly girl. I says, oh, no, what's he want? He says, Kelly girl, you know, it's Gratitude Month in Alcoholics Anonymous. What are you grateful for? I says, Merle, I'm not grateful for anything. My children have been taken care away from me by the state of California. He says, Kelly girl, your children weren't taken away. It's because every time you drank and did what you were doing, you were giving your children up. He says, now, Kelly girl, What are you grateful for? I said, my husband got killed in a car accident by a drunk. And he says, Kelly girl, your husband was a drunk. And he's the one that caused the accident. If you would have been in that car, you could have died too. What are you grateful for? Merle, I told you I'm not grateful for anything. So he had this yellow pad. Where he got it from, I didn't know, you know. And a pencil, and he brings it out, and he says, here. I go, what's that? It should have been a red flag to run, you know. He says, let me ask you something, Kelly. Do you have syphilis? No, Merle, I don't have syphilis. He says, okay, write this down. Gratitude number one. I'm grateful I don't have syphilis. He says, okay. He says, what's your second gratitude, Merle? And he says, let me ask you something, Kelly. Are you in a nut house or jail today, locked up? I said, no, but the people in Downey want to have me put in a nut house. He says, well, he says, your next gratitude, I'm grateful I'm not locked up in a nut house or in jail today. He says, now, Kelly girl, have you murdered anybody today? I said, no, Merle, but I think I'm about to. So anyway, he says, Kelly, I want you to keep that page with you whenever you go into meetings, since you don't listen anyway. I want you to read those gratitudes over and over and over and over and over. He says, you know, it'll give you a little nickel shot in your subconscious, and it'll turn that negative subconscious around a little nickel at a time. And one day you'll wake up feeling like $1 million. And he was right. And so anyway, he says, Kelly girl, did you get a sponsor? I says, Merle, the women here at the snake pit want nothing to do with me. He says, well, I got some news for you. I said, what's that, Merle? He says, the guys don't think too much of you either. Okay. So anyway, this little redhead come up to me, this little lady named Eileen, and she came up to me. She says, Kelly, I'd like to take you to a meeting tonight. I says, really, me? She says, yeah, and if you go to that meeting with me, I'll take you out for dessert afterwards. Free food. Oh, my goodness, I'm in. So she and all, I was so excited. You know, I sat there in the snake pit all day long watching the clock, you know, and she showed up. You know, today we show up. And she showed up, and she took me to the women's club, and she sat me in the front row, and then she got around away from me, and I didn't see her again. But I was sitting in that front row, and the craziest human I've ever heard or seen in my life was the speaker that night, okay? And he gets up there, and he says that he was in the Texas Insane Asylum, and he escaped. My hero. Oh, my goodness. Now, I got the disease that is locked on the inside of me, okay? You can't get into me. I got to take a key and open it up and let you in. And that night, I opened it up a little bit. Oh, my goodness, if they lock me up here, I want to know how to escape. You know what I mean? You know what I mean. Yeah. So anyway, and then he says something else. He says, and all five of my children have been returned to me. Oh, his children have been returned to him. Oh, my goodness. And then he said, and I've been on my job for 25 years, the same job. I was fired from 32 jobs before I got to AA. How does he do that? And I found out the way you keep a job, you show up. I didn't know that. And then he said, And I've got hundreds of friends. I can go to any country, any city in the world, and walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm surrounded by friends. Oh, my goodness. And I was sitting there, and I was enchanted by it. And afterwards, he got through speaking, and I was just sitting there. Eileen never came back to get me, and he comes over to me, and he says, "Hey, kid, didn't they ever teach you that after a speaker comes all this way to speak, that you're supposed to get up and thank them for coming all this way?" I says, "No, they never told me." He says, "Oh, you're that girl. I'm famous. I'm famous." I said, "Yeah, that's me." He says, "Good." He says, "Tomorrow morning, 11:15, on the dot, I want you to call this number, 213-624-9258. Yeah, and he says, "On the dot." And boy, I sat all day long in the snake pit, and I looked at the clock, and 14, and I watched that. I made sure that nobody got on that phone, you know. So I made sure nobody made a phone call. And then 11:14, I got up, and I called that number, and he answered the phone. "Clancy Emelison." And Clancy became my sponsor. And he had me come down to the midnight mission. And he says, "Kid, what's your big problem today?" I said, "They're going to lock me up in a crazy high, you know, downy. They're wanting to, they have a term for it." And they says, "They're going to lock me up." And he says, "Well, I got good news for you." I said, "Please." He says, "They don't lock people up in crazy houses for being crazy." I said, "They don't?" He says, "No, they only lock you up if you act crazy." And he says, "Now what else?" And I says, those children. At night, I wake up in the middle of the night, and I wonder where they're at. Are they loved? Are they cared about? Are they healthy? Where are they? I go through malls, especially around the holidays, looking for kids about my kids' age, thinking, are those my children? And I try to go up to the kids, and their parents kind of get them away from me. And he says, "We got a solution for that in Alcoholics Anonymous." I said, "You do?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "What I want you to do," he says, "I want you to start throwing yourself into working with other people's children. You can help them like nobody else can. When they come in the Alcoholics Anonymous, I want you to throw yourself into working with them as much in its intensity that you are working with somebody else's children. I promise you that whoever's taking care of your children will take care of them to the same intensity." And I believed him. And I went to the, he said, "I want you to come to the Wednesday night meeting over in Snooty Tooties area of Los Angeles." And I did. And he says, "I want you to dress like a lady." Yeah, I know. And he says, "Then since you're bilingual," see, I was bilingual. I spoke vulgarity in English. And he says, "All I want you to do is put your hand out and say, 'Hi, I'm Kelly. Who are you and how are you doing?' And shut up." He says, "Because that's all you know how to say right now." And he says, "And then I want you to listen." He says, "That's why you got two ears and one mouth, so that you listen twice as much as you." Yeah, 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 yeah. And so I showed up at Wednesday night. That became my home group, Pacific group. I'm a Pacific grouper. Oh, Miss Sue knows what I'm talking about. Anyway, I did. And he told me, he says, "Kelly," he says, "you're so sick, the steps aren't going to work for you." He says, "You're going to have to throw yourself into service. Anytime you're asked to do service, the answer is yes." He says, "By the way, you also need to get a job." He says, "And since you have no education, you need to go to school." And I asked, Steve Cooper was rich. I knew he was rich because he drove a Cadillac. Yeah. You know, the man's rich if he has a, you know, expensive car, you know. So I asked Steve, I said, what do you do? And he says, I'm a real estate broker. And I thought, if he can be a real estate broker, anybody can, you know. So I went and I got the, you know, I went to school and I became a real estate broker. Yeah. And I've been a real estate broker for 40 years. And the same job for 40 years, you guys, huh? And I'm still working and I love what I do. They says, you know, if you love what you do, it's not like working every day. It's like going and having fun. And I go and have fun every day in real estate. And you know what I mean, Peggy? You know what I mean. She loves it too, don't you, honey? Yeah. anyway, anyway, this guy comes up to me and he says, hey, I heard you're a big shot real estate broker. I said, I am? He says, yeah. He says, we have this new idea. It's never been tried to get before anywhere. What we want to do is find a house, and then the judge and I, Judge Emerson and I, what we're going to do is pick up women on the streets. They have children, and instead of putting them into the system, we would like to have a recovery house where we can put children, their parents, the mother and their children together, and they all recover together. Can you find us a house? Oh, you want me to do it? Yeah. And I went out, I found that house. And then they put me on the board, too. I was on the board for 25 years, by the way. Anyway, that house is called the Foley House, and it's in Whittier, California. And it was the first women and children's home in the world. And hundreds of women have gone through there with their children. And I was so privileged to do that. And our first Christmas, I was in the back and watching Christmas go on, and I was crying like a baby. And I, by that time, Clancy had told me to get a service sponsor. I had a service sponsor, Lucretia and John. And anyway, I'm crying, and Lucretia looks at me and pats me on the back and says, well, it got to you, didn't you? Didn't it, you tough old broad, you know? I said, yeah. I said, and I had that, you know, moment, and I says, whatever I'm ever asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to do. lasted for about 90 seconds, and all of a sudden I realized, I says, you know, my sponsor won't let me date. He says, I want you staying away from the men in AA. I don't want you corrupting any of them, Kelly. He says, yeah. And I says, I'm not allowed to date. But I was a real estate broker, and I knew how to market myself, right? Uh-huh. So I put an ad in the LA Times. Feisty redhead looking for a 12-step relationship. Oh, I got a lot of letters. Oh, baby, did I get the letters, you know. I got some of them written in pencil. Then I got this one letter, and it had a glamour shot in it. And it had two lines. It says, I'm in a 12-step program, too. Call me if you want. So I thought, ha-ha. You know, I'm in the granddaddy of AA meetings. Let me see about him. So I pick up the phone, and he answered. I said, what little meetings do you go to? He says, I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. Manna from heaven. So I says, why don't we meet at an AA meeting, you know? And so we met at the Bellflower Big Book. Johnny Harris was meeting. And there's a bunch of guys called Dog on the Roof. And they're all from, gotten out of prison, and they have, you know, they're sober and everything. They're my buddies. Those are my buds. So anyway, I stood out in front of all the greeters, you know, because I didn't want any other woman to get a hold of them, you know. And I grabbed a hold of them. I said, come on, I'll introduce you to some of my friends. I took them in, and I put them right in the middle of the Dog on the Roof. And I started to walk away, and I heard him say, run, run for your life. But he took me out for cheesecake afterwards. He fed me, you know, free food, you know. I went along with it. And you don't tell an Al-Anon to stay away from an alcoholic because they fall in love with you. Huh? They do, Robin. Anyway, he fell in love with me, and we started dating. And he had a sponsor. Her name was Vinoy something or other. She didn't like me. But she took off for one time to speak in Oklahoma, where she was from. And that weekend, I took him to Nordstrom. They were having a sale on diamonds. And by the time Vinoy got back, we were engaged. Anyway, St. Mike and I have been married. Well, that's what the home group calls him for. I don't know what reason they call him St. Mike, but we've been married for 31 years. Clancy gave me away at my wedding. And when we got at the back of the aisle, you know, for me to walk down, and I was dressed in white, you know, I had 12 bridesmaids, you know, and dressed in white, and I'd been married 9 times before, and and anyway, I'm standing there with him, and all of a sudden, I got this novel idea, and I says, Clancy, I don't think I want to go through with this. And he looked at me and says, Kelly, you're either going to walk down this aisle with me or I'm going to throw you down this aisle. And anyway, we went on a honeymoon to Hawaii. And we got back, and I made an appointment to go down and talk to my sponsor. I had to get rid of this Al-Anon. He had character defects, let me tell you. A lot of them, okay? And I had lived alone for a long time, okay? So anyway, all these character defects that he had, I just couldn't put up with, you know? And I went down, I sat in front of him, and he says, yeah, what's the problem? I got to get rid of him. He's got all these character defects. He says, oh, really? And he pulls out this yellow pad. Where do they get this from, these sponsors, you know? And he takes and he sits it in front of me and puts pen on top, and he says, put Mike's name on top. And I did. He says, put down all of his character defects. Yeah. He always used to trick me into stuff like that. So I did. But I put them all down. He looked at me and said, uh-huh. I said, Saul? And I go, yeah, that's for him. He says, okay, here's what we're going to do. And he took it and put it up in front of me and turned it around. He says, now what I want you to do, I want you to mark Mike's name off the top. And I want you to put your name on top. Because if you spot it, you got it. And he says, now what I want you to do is I want you to go home, and for the first 5 minutes, if you can do it for 5 minutes, he says, go, and the first one up here, I want you to work on it on yourself. And from now on, I want you to keep your eyes off of him and on yourself. And I want you to work on those on yourself. And let me tell you something. We've been married 31 years. Today, he's 78% perfect for me. Anyway, but in the middle of the night, I'd wake up. And he had two boys, and I got to be a stepmom to those two boys. And I got to learn how to be a mom, you know? And, it was so wonderful because they were teenagers and they were crazy. And I loved them both. But in the middle of the night, I'd wonder where my kids were. You know, where are they, you know? And I couldn't get back to sleep. And it was just agonizing. I thought, I don't know if I can stay sober, you know? I don't know if I can stay sober. This is driving me crazy. And we moved to Florida. My husband got transferred out there, and I got my real estate license in Florida, and I was doing this. Woohoo! I was doing an open house, and I was picking up the flags after the open house, and I had my big Cadillac parked in the parking lot, and I had stuff. The more stuff I bought, it seemed like the bigger this hole in my gut got. You know, it didn't fill anything. As soon as I bought something and I got it, all of a sudden, the hole just got bigger and bigger and bigger. It didn't solve anything, but I got a Cadillac, and I had this Cadillac parked up on this designer driveway. And it was the 2nd of August, and there was 135-degree heat coming out of that driveway, and something had happened to my car, and all of a sudden I heard bang, and I looked up, and it was my car coming at me like a freight train. And I tried to get out of the way, but I didn't, and it caught my left leg and pulled me under the undercarriage. And what it did was it smashed my left hand, my left leg, smashed a I stand before you with titanium and screws holding me together. And it did a tib fib on the right. It rolled up my body, pulled my rib cage out of my sternum, crushed my lung, and my whole life went in front of me. And I was ready to go. I said, everything I've ever wanted in my life, I got through my family and Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been involved in everybody's families. I've seen children being born. I am so blessed to have been involved with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was ready to go. And I knew that it was going to run over my head, and it was the last conscious thought I had ever going to think, and it ran over my head. And when they took me down to the hospital, I was flatlined. I was dead. Anyway, the next thing that happened, I guess, I'm embarrassed to tell you this. I got rejected from heaven. Okay. The spirits came out and they said, you got to go back. I said, I don't want to go back. I felt loved. I felt like I had satin around me, you know. I don't want to go back. No, you got to go back. Because if you come in now, it's for naught. And poof, I was back. And I opened up my eyes, and this nurse, his name was David. No, I've seen Blessed by an Angel, okay? So I know what it's all about. Anyway, he went hysterical. He said, oh, my God, she's alive, alive. And they got me into surgery. And I got home, and my landline rang, and it was a girl from Southern California. She says, Kelly, we want you to come out and speak at Bud McDonald's 50th birthday because you put Foley House together, and we want you to come and speak, you know. I says, oh, I can't. I'm a gimp. She says, a gimp? I said, yeah, I'm a gimp. I can't go anywhere. I can't speak anywhere. She says, Kelly, you used to sponsor me. I knew I was in trouble. She says, I remember when you said anything that you were ever asked to do, you were good to do. Alcoholics Anonymous. She says, do you have a computer? I said, yeah, it was one of those big ones, you know. She says, get on your computer and get an e-ticket. Tell them you're a gimp, and whenever you get to the airline, they'll put you in the front of the line. And she slammed the phone down. I don't remember being like that with her. So I get on the computer, I get an e-ticket, they said, go to your email. After 6.5 weeks of being in the hospital, I had all kinds of emails, and I'm going, delete, 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 delete. I come to this one, and it stops me. And it's someone with my son's birth name. Oh. And I just pushed the button very carefully. And this is what it said. Did I find you? Is this you? And I wanted him to know that I'm a good woman today. And I says, yes, she found me. And I want you to know that I'm almost 20 years sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. He emails me right back, and he says, I want you to know I'm almost 6 months sober. In the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, well, I'm going to be off the computer for a while because I have to go out to Los Angeles and I got to go speak at this old timers. And he says, oh, really? He says, because I didn't know where in that world my children were. He says, well, while you're out in God, you know, God, yeah. Oh. Anyway, he says, well, while you're out in Los Angeles, come on down to the Newport Alano Club. I'll be waiting for you. And I drove down Newport Boulevard, and I came to 32nd, and I see this hyper kid walking on the corner. I said, that's my boy. And I pulled the car over and leaped out of the car with the walker, you know. Put my arms around him, and I haven't let go. And he told me, he says, your daughter loathes me, loathes you. She wishes that you'd be in a jail and in a cave somewhere and never gotten out. And he says, I want to have a relationship with you, but if you think you're going to use me to get to Tracy, we're going to end this right now. And I said to him, I'm going to take what I can get, Tim. I says, I promise you, I will take what I can get. I want a relationship with you. And I got in the car to go back to Florida. And in those days on the 405, you could answer the phone, you know. And my cell phone rang, and I answered it, and it was a young lady. And she says, is this Terry? Nobody had called me that in many, many years. I knew I was in trouble. I said, yes, it is. And he said, she says, this is your daughter, Tracy. She says, we need to meet. She says, but I don't want you near my home. So we met in a restaurant. And we pulled the walls down between us. I called my sponsor first. He says, remember, 2 ears and 1 mouth, okay? You go with your hat in your hand and you listen because she's been damaged a lot. And she has a disease that's called anorexia. Thank you. I can't say it, but that's what it is. And she belongs to a church out in Orange County. Some guy named Rick Somebody is the, you know, and they have a recovery thing. And she said, my friends wanted to take me to this recovery thing at this church. And that weekend, they were having what was called a forgiveness weekend. They were looking for people who had some kind of a resentment that they couldn't get rid of it. And asked them if they'd like to come that weekend, and they said, "Tracy, you need to go because you're so resentful against your mother that it's eaten you up alive." And she told me, she said, "All my life, everybody told me you're just like your mother, just like your life. And I hate you so much. I hate you. I loathe you so much. It's eaten me up inside." And she says she went to that weekend, and her friends set her in the front row. And the couple comes out. A couple, okay? A couple come out. And they says, "Does somebody have a resentment that they can't get over?" And so her friends go, "Tracy, Tracy." So the lady says, "Tracy, would you like to come up and, you know, and we'll show you how it works." And they pushed her up on stage, you know, and she sat down, and the lady says, "Okay, this is how it works. Who do you have a resentment against?" She says, "My birth mother. She's a monster. She needs to be locked up somewhere." She says, and the lady says, "You never, ever, ever have to have anything to do with that birth mother, ever, bless you, and your wife. You never have to do anything, but let's get you over it. And do you agree to do that?" And Tracy says, "Oh, yes, please, I'm going to get over it." And the lady says to her, "What's your birth mother's name?" And Tracy said to her, "Teresa Kelly." And the lady looked at her and said, "Teresa Kelly from Downey, California?" That couple that was doing the forgiveness weekend, that couple was my service couple, my sponsors. God works in the mysterious ways, you guys. And Lucretia told her, "You know, in your case, you've got to get a hold of your mother. She's been looking for you for years." And anyway, one of the people that Clancy introduced me to was a guy by the name of Sandy Beach. And Sandy Beach told me, he says, "Kelly, you're all about stuff, stuff, stuff." He says, "And your soul is starving to death. Your soul is starving to death. You've got to start being a seeker. You've got to start reading spiritual things." And he gave me a book. It was called Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes. Now, I'm on my fourth time through. I still don't understand it, okay? But every time I read it, I get feeling better and better and better. And I started doing the 11th step. My message is that I'm doing a living amends to my children, a living amends. And anyway, once I started feeding the soul, all of a sudden God work opens up my whole life to me. It's amazing. Whenever you feed your soul, all of a sudden your life opens up. And after we got through, I got in the car and I was so emotional, you know, to go come back to Florida. And I thought, well, I forgot to ask her if she wants to keep in touch with me. But by, having a cell phone, having her phone number on there, I pushed her phone number and she answered right away. I said, "Tracy, would you like to keep in touch with me?" She says, "I'm so glad you called before you go back to Florida. Would you like to meet your grandbabies?" Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I met Blake and Warren and I fell in love with them. And I'll tell you one thing. That my daughter says, "I had a fabulous mother. You can never take her place. Best we can ever do is be friends." I said, "Tracy, I know how to be a friend because you taught me how to be a friend. You know, I'm as good as my word. I show up whenever I say I'm going to. I listen. and I care about you more than I care about what's going on for me. I know how to be a friend today. You know, that's one of the thresholds. One of the thresholds we talk about that we go through is how to be caring and giving. And I said, I know how to be a friend. And I did. I started being a friend to her 20 years ago. 20 years ago, we started a friendship. And a couple years ago, I had a severe stroke. I was paralyzed on my left-hand side. I couldn't talk at all, okay, at all. Couldn't say a word. I'm in the hospital, okay. I'm supposed to speak at the Florida State, and I can't talk, you know. And this doctor comes in, Dr. Carol, and she's working with me, teaching me one word at a time. And she told my husband, she says, bring her a book, and every morning whenever you wake up, she says, I want you to read out of that book. And he brought me that one by James. Yeah, that's it. And he brings me that book to read every morning. I'm reading that, you know. It's about people who have had psychic changes in their lives, you know. And I read that alive. And this woman worked with me so hard. And she taught me to talk again. She taught me to talk again, Dr. Carol. And I was out at a retreat and with all my sponsees. Now we're out at this retreat. And all of a sudden, I didn't turn my cell phone off. And all of a sudden, my cell phone's ringing. One of my girls says, hey, it's your doctor calling you. Oh, my God, they're going to call me back or something like that. There's something the matter. And I said, Dr. Carol. And this is what she said to me. She says, when I was in Colorado, I used to have a sponsor there. And now that I'm in Florida, I don't have a sponsor. Will you sponsor me? No wonder I felt so close to her in that, you know. Anyway, I'm going to end with this. My daughter came out. Came home from the hospital after my stroke, and I'm sitting in my chair, my easy chair, and all of a sudden, bang, bang, bang on the door. My husband goes and runs to open it up, and this person says, special delivery for Teresa Kelly Brownell. I go, special delivery for me? I got up to look to see, and there's my daughter and my son standing out on our porch. And they came out, and they spent a week with me, and we were a family, you guys. We were a family. And when my kids were leaving, my daughter turns around to me, and this is what she said. She put her arms around me, and she says, Mom, I love you. And all of a sudden, you know, that hole, it filled up. It filled up. And today we have a fabulous, fabulous relationship. You know, I'm grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's my life. I'm grateful for the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and 12 concepts. It's my design for living. But more than that, okay, I'm grateful for all of you in rooms like this that shows me AA works, and it works good. Thank you.